Hey everyone, I'm Roz the Recruiter, and this is Y'all Hiring, a podcast dedicated to giving job seekers the tools and resources needed to get a leg up. Hey everyone, thanks for joining. Today I am joined by a dear friend and colleague, Wahab Owolabi. Wahab is the founder and CEO of URX, and I'm going to let Wahab tell us more about what URX actually is.
Hey Roz, thanks for having me on the pod. Really excited to be here with you. URX is a community of recruiting professionals. So it's made up of technical recruiters from some of the top companies in tech, as well as employer brand marketers. And what brings us all together is we are all passionate about diversity and inclusion and really trying to make an impact at the entry points of the workforce. So our mission is quite simple. We want to build a more inclusive and diverse workforce, one closed rec at a time.
That's dope. And I love that. Is URX focused on underrepresented minorities specifically, or is it open to like all in this community?
Yeah, it's open to everybody. And I think that it's kind of interesting, right? Like you talk about entrepreneurship and, you know, they say that companies take the shape and the form of their founders. And so myself being somebody who identifies as an underrepresented minority, you know, diversity and inclusion is at the heart of everything that we do. So the community itself is open to anybody, but we're very deliberate about the work that we do to serve specific communities.
I love that. And you're spot on when you say, like, we take on the form of our leadership. That's typically how companies look. They shape up looking just like their leadership. So I love that. Now, URX was scheduled to have, or I remember, a pretty large and exciting event coming up. But just like the rest of the world, you all, too, have been impacted by the coronavirus and have now moved into a virtual state. How have things been for you migrating your model virtually? And what are some of the things that you all have done?
Yeah, I mean, before I even touch on that, first, it's been crazy. But before I even get into that, I thought your point around, you know, your leadership and the teams that are built around sort of like your likeness, I couldn't agree more. I mean, at URX, my partner is a woman who identifies as Filipino. Her name is Char de la Pena. Everybody that we work with is just a very diverse group. And I find it funny sometimes when people talk about having a hard time finding a diverse group of people to work with, because I've never had that problem. So it's always interesting to me when I hear that, because I really don't believe it. If you seek it out, if you're willing to work with people that don't look or think like you, then you wouldn't have any issues.
You are spot on. You said I haven't had that problem. That is so funny to me. I laughed when I was on mute because I didn't want to disturb the conversation. But, you know, what's funny is that, you know, when you are Black or you are Filipino or you are Latinx, and we tend to open up things to hiring, I see that people from different backgrounds feel more comfortable applying or wanting to work with us, because it's a given that we're going to prioritize diversity and inclusive behaviors from inceptions, because our communities do. And so that is so interesting. But now let's talk to me about the impact that COVID has had and you all pivoting to in this virtual world. And what does that look like for URX in the next couple months, maybe even year?
Yeah, it's been crazy. And I mean, first and foremost, it you know, what we've gone through like pales in comparison to like just real world problems. But that being said, you know, we host this 2-day in-person event in San Francisco. And in about 2 weeks, we transitioned to a live online event. I think as an entrepreneur, you know, one of the things that I wanted to make sure I did was not cheapen the brand and experience that I had built in terms of the in-person event. And so I saw a lot of different event producers basically saying, hey, we can't host this event in person anymore, but we're just going to do it online. I didn't like that approach. So what we did was we gave all of our registrants the opportunity to transfer their tickets to 2021. And then we created a new experience with a new brand as an online event. And anybody who transferred their registration, we provided them with a free ticket to this new separate experience. And then we put an appropriate value on the ticket to for those who maybe were finding out about us for the first time and wanted to attend. And so I think the big learning for me there was, you know, the simple thing is, hey, let's just take it online. But it kind of cheapens the experience because people have come to expect a certain experience in person. And I didn't want to put the same name and same brand and just say, hey, we're just going to do it online. So it was a process. We talked to a lot of our like attendees and, you know, sort of got a lot of feedback. That's another important thing I think that we did was just to make sure that whatever decisions we made, we made sure that we were making it with their best interests in mind and then communicating it effectively.
Now that's dope because what I heard there, which I have not seen at a lot of other organizations, was that you honored everyone's ticket who had purchased the event and you moved them to the following year, right? For the next event. But then when you launched your virtual event, you didn't go back and double charge those attendees. You gave them free admission. What, why was that so important for you?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, my value as an entrepreneur, as a brand is trust. People like have a certain level of trust and expectation of us. And I just put myself in their shoes and, you know, they didn't do anything to create this, you know, situation. And so I just really had to think about, you know, how best can I serve them? And so it's also, you know, I think it's also like a give and take. So we gave people the opportunity to take a refund. Less than 10% of the folks who had already registered did that. So we gave them the opportunity to take a refund. They didn't do it because of that trust. And then we wanted to, almost as a thank you, to be honest, say, hey, look, we're going to put all into this new experience. You trust us to put on a phenomenal online event. And because you've transferred your ticket, you know, we're going to hook you up. And so I think it's, you know, people don't always think of, they say like, oh, they put your customers first and not everybody always does that. But, you know, I feel like I really, you know, put my money where my mouth is. Sponsors, on the other hand, you know, I don't know if we're going to get into that, but that's something that, you know, we also gave the sponsors the opportunity to do the same. And I thought it was really interesting that, sponsors typically ask for refunds, and we had to be very understanding that, you know, different businesses are being impacted during this time. And so that was difficult, but still we made that decision to refund all the sponsor money that we received for the in-person event and then gave sponsors an opportunity to make a new decision if they wanted to participate in the online event.
I am flabbergasted over here. I really hate that we can't be in the same room like old times, but I'm literally gasping for a couple of reasons. One, I'm really shocked that you even gave sponsors the option. I've partnered with several organizations right now that we are, you know, postponing or moving to next year, or they've canceled indefinitely, but not many of them gave us the option for a refund. A lot of them are pushing forward with live events that they're asking us to sponsor in addition to, and it's making it very difficult for us to make those calls. You know, it's making us very difficult for me to say, yes, we can add another 30K or 20K or 40K for an event when we really don't have that kind of money just laying around. And so I think that's admirable that you did that. I will say it's also probably a nice little mental note, right, as you go into next year. What companies you want to, you know, continue to pursue and which ones can't. So something to think about. Now, I know you really do cater and support the university communities. So the folks that are coming into internships, this is something that my executive producer, Shauna Kimball, and I have been talking a lot about because people are like, whoa, there's a whole group of folks out there that were lined up to walk into their company in June and get this intern experience and then start to create relationships and networks and mentors that would help them post-college. And that's been taken away, or more so changed for a lot of people, to a virtual world. So I'm curious, what advice, or what is URX, or what are you doing for the intern community as they now try to pivot to virtual learning?
Yeah, Roz, I mean, it's crazy. When I first grasped just the reality of the situation, my first instinct was, you know, what can I do in terms of, you know, all the first responders and, you know, delivering food and things like that. And I just took a step back and felt like, well, I'm really not in a position to make like, you know, like a really big impact in that way. And I thought, like, what can I leverage where I'm uniquely positioned to make an impact? And obviously it's my community, it's my organization, you know, where we have access to so many top companies and the recruiters in those companies. And so, you know, to support students, you know, what we did was we launched a couple of different initiatives. So the first was we created a website, talentboard.io, where students could go and fill out a form, and their information was immediately sent straight to over 1,000 recruiters in our community. So no middleman, no friction, just, you know, and then as a recruiting leader, you know this, like, we have recruiters in our community now getting access to talented students in real time. So that was the first thing we did. The second thing was we launched a program called Intern Hacks. And so that's internhacks.com. And what we thought about was, okay, you don't have an internship, but that does not mean that you shouldn't do anything this summer and you shouldn't find yourself in the fall without having improved as an engineer, as a product manager, product marketer, whatever the case may be. So we've partnered with a lot of the companies in our community to create this 3-month experience where you get mentorship from engineers and product leaders at this company. You are eligible to win prizes and credits and a bunch of different swag and goodies. And ultimately, the experience, we wanted to put students in a position, regardless if they have an internship or not, to get the next best thing, right? And that's in the fall, making sure that if you're a junior in the fall, you're in a great spot to get a 2021 summer internship, or if you're going to be a senior in the fall, you're in a great spot to get that great job out of college and secure that bag. I mean, it's a real crazy time right now, because basically, you know, university recruiting is like musical chairs. You know, when the music stops, you know, there's students that are left out. And right now, the music was still going, and COVID came out and took half the chairs away. And a lot of people were really focusing on how to, you know, help those students get jobs. And that's admirable. We did our part in that. But we have to be realistic that there are going to be students, and a lot more of them this summer, that don't have these opportunities. And we have to make sure that those students are not behind in terms of how attractive they are as technical candidates in the fall, because if we do, that tech talent pool, the diversity, the disparity in diversity in that talent pool will increase, and we can't let that happen.
Spot on. Like, that's what I love about you. And that's what I love about the URX community is, you know, there are organizations that do it all. But I love that you focus on this university, this particular time period in someone's career life cycle. And I refer to it as that because it's such a critical time in someone's life. And now, like you did a great job of illustrating that with musical chairs. Now they're stuck. And so I think kudos to you. And if you can, please send me the link to that so I can share it with our followers, because there is a large disparity in the number of students that lost their internships. You know, I saw a beautiful post on LinkedIn from a young lady who was slated to do an internship at Disney, but they had to cancel their internship program. And she just laid out all of her software development skills, you know, what the feedback she had gotten from Disney interviewers was, and was hoping that someone still had a spot for her. And the reality is, we probably don't. There probably are no more internships available at this point in time. And so I also just wanted to put a plug out there that we will see a lot more fall internships popping up that we hadn't seen before. that are part-time, and there will be some that will be virtual. So interns, please, or people that will be looking for internships, please look out for those as well. Now, Wahab, you are an entrepreneur, but you also have a day job, and we don't talk much about that. But I'm curious, because we do see a lot of people that have these amazing ideas or these passion projects and these side hustles that can have the potential to be as grand and as great as URX. But what is your advice, or talk a little bit more about your process and how you navigate the two worlds? How does one leverage the other, and sort of what advice you would have to anyone else looking to kick off a startup or go into the entrepreneur field?
Yeah. So, I mean, I hooped in college, and I try to like kind of keep like an athlete's mentality when it comes to my life. And, you know, one of the things that you always hear athletes say is that, you know, don't put me in a box, you know, like whether you're a basketball player, football player, whatever, you know, you do a lot of different things, and you have everybody is capable and has the skill to really do anything you put your mind to, right? Like if you spend the time to learn how to code, like you can go and start building products. If you spend the time to learn music, like you can go make music. And so I take the same approach. But the other thing that people say is you got to keep the main thing the main thing. You got to know what the main thing is. And, you know, for the early part of my career, I made a choice that I would really commit to, you know, being great at my craft. And I chose, you know, recruiting in the technical space. And I span a couple of different industries within that. And that allowed me then to start to create some of these organizations and some of these entrepreneurial initiatives that I have. It also allowed me to be really attractive, frankly, to people who wanted to work with me. You know, I wasn't coming at them as somebody with no track record or no experience. You know, they were like, wow, like, look at this person. He's maintaining a full-time job, creating a great reputation for himself, and produces great work at that day job. So, you know, I think one of the things I want to share is that doing two things, you have to make sure that you're able to do both things well. And the only way you do that is you understand what's the main thing, and you leverage that appropriately to help kind of springboard you or springboard some of the different initiatives that you have. And then ultimately, got to have great people that work with you. I mean, Roz, I've met some of the folks on your team. You have great people that are around you that work with you. And, you know, everything that I do, I could not do it by myself at this scale. I mean, the early days, it was definitely just me, kind of long nights. But along the way, I've had a lot of really amazing people. You know, I want to give a shout out to Char, Kat. I shouldn't have even started down this road, because I'm gonna miss some people that are gonna be mad at me. But there's just so many people that are that like work with you to help you scale up some of the great ideas that you might have.
Yeah, we never do it by ourselves. It's never you. You know, it's funny. I love that you are giving them, you know, their flowers, because that's the reality. You said something, and you said, you know, we got to keep the main thing the main thing. But then you also talked about, you know, the attractiveness of being, of having that diverse of a background and success in a couple of different areas. One thing I noticed when I was doing a little research on you was you spent some time in the VC world, and that's super lucrative, super exciting, fast paced. Talk to me about why you made the switch. Talk to me about how you walked away from something that seems to be like where everyone wants to go. And how did you keep the main thing the main thing, even when you were being presented with that?
Yeah. Well, I learned a ton working in venture capital. It was it's a different world. I'm still connected to that world. But definitely when you're in it every day, it's a crazy experience. You know, the funny thing about keep the main thing is, it's your choice what that is, and it can change. And so the main thing for me has shifted and evolved over time. Back when I was in working in venture capital, the biggest thing I learned is ownership is key. Ownership is key. And I didn't own anything at that time. And so for me to really start to own and build equity in businesses that I run, and also gain equity into, you know, some of the startups out here in Silicon Valley, you know, I needed to break out and go do that. And so that was really the decision point for me pretty early on, actually, when I got to venture capital, when I learned and I looked around and I was like, oh, okay, that's the blueprint. You got to own equity. I said, let me go build my own stuff so I could start to build equity in my own business, obviously. But then also, if I'm going to have a 9-to-5, I want to have a 9-to-5 in a space where I could own a piece of the company that I'm working for.
That is it. You know, I love how you just gave us a little bit of kind of reassurance and inspiration. You know, the main thing can change and it can evolve, and it's up to you to figure out what that main thing is. I'm going to ask you a much more personal question here and tie it into me, because these are some really important areas that you're dabbling in. You know, you're making an impact on multiple communities. One, the recruitment space, right? Those of us that do this, you're really doing a great job of providing us with resources and tools to make our lives better and how we really build and engage with talent communities. You're also then really, really doing a solid favor and support for the university community as a whole that's looking to break into technology. What I'm still trying to understand and I haven't got is why? Why are you doing this? Why is this your main thing? Why is this so important to you specifically?
Well, you really gonna put me on the spot. I think about that one. I come from, I would say, by most definitions, I believe I come from a privileged background. I'm Nigerian. I grew up in New York. I got to New York when I was 4 years old. I went to public school in New York, but then I went to a boarding high school in Virginia. You know, I hooped, so, you know, I had like a little ride to get over there. And then, I went to like this small liberal arts college outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I'll never forget this, but I had a Twitter account before I knew you could like actually work at Twitter. Like, that was a thing that people did. Like, it's not crazy. You know, I was at SCMU and I was hooping with a lot of kids that were going to the School of Business over there. And they were talking about how, I got this term sheet and, this investor just gave me this angel round for me to start my company. And I'm like, what? Like, somebody just gave you like $100,000 because you had a great idea and they think you're smart enough to execute it? Yes. And I'm like 22, 23, and I could only imagine like what could I have accomplished by that age if when I was 15, 16, 17, if I knew that that was something I could aspire to. And I had a great upbringing, right? I just wasn't exposed to it. And so for me, I think some of the conversations we have around diversity and inclusion is conversations around how do we increase the talent pool, right? So not just shifting pieces around like existing people in tech from one company to another, but how do we increase the number of minorities that are actually going into tech? And then two, how do we expose folks like ourselves to these opportunities early on? Because choice is power. And so if I know that this is an opportunity that I can pursue, how much better am I in the pursuit of that opportunity, right? Yeah, show me somebody who's been working at something for 10 years versus somebody who's been working at something for 2 years. Like, who on average is going to be more successful? So that's part of the reason why I do it. Like, I think that it can really make an impact at scale in that way. And then I'm an entrepreneur at heart, and I think I'll probably break into, I have a lot of different ideas. I love sports. I love culture. And so, you know, between me and you, you know, there are a couple of things in that arena that I've been tinkering with. But for now, like, this is where I see a unique opportunity for myself to really make an impact. So I'm going to keep the main thing the main thing.
Okay, I like that. I do have to say, though, it's not just between me and you, because it's between me and you and at least 1,000 subscribers and whoever to this joint. So unfortunately, I can't hold you a secret, but I will say I'm excited for you, though. I am excited for you because I know that whatever it is that you're going to touch, you're going to touch it with such passion and commitment, and it's going to have an impact. The last couple of questions I have are more COVID and related and kind of this new normal that we find ourselves in. And I guess I want to ask, do you see the things that we're going through right now with COVID having a long-term impact? And I don't mean financially, but just how work gets done. I'll give you an example. I was asked this question today, and I said, you know, I think, you know, moving forward, you probably won't hear that old answer that we used to hear about remote work was, no one needs you in the office. We've learned now that that's a false, you know, I could do this job from wherever. So I will, I think that one of the lasting impacts that we'll see because of COVID will definitely be more distributed teams. And so I'm curious if you see any impacts, whether in the collegiate world, whether it be in the recruitment world, or even the entrepreneur world, do you see this impact, any impacts that COVID is having on those industries?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I think it depends on different demographics and profiles of people. So I think one, like if people have kids, for example, I think that they're going to appreciate, you know, having that office. And obviously the kids are home right now because of the situation. And then, so I think there's not going to be much that's going to change in terms of people are always going to want to have a space to work on things that they're passionate about with other people that are passionate about the same things. I think that those spaces now will shift. So, you know, when, you know, this situation is over, I can see a couple of things. One, you know, like really high performing people on the coast that are paying like crazy amounts of rent. I can see folks like that saying, you know, hey boss, I'm not about to be paying this rent or paying this crazy mortgage out here. I'm gonna do this work from this place in the country that I want to live that is way more cost effective. I think you'll see a lot of the larger companies downsize in their space and invest in commercial real estate in some of these more distributed areas where the real estate isn't as expensive. And then the last piece around just, you know, entrepreneurship, I think it'd be kind of interesting, you know, how the aviation industry recovers from this. Because, you know, as an entrepreneur, you know, that freedom of movement and that ability to, for example, you know, a trip that I take a lot, LA to SF, right? Or well, from the SF to LA and back. I'm interested to see like how that affects people's ability to connect in person. There's still something to be said about going and meeting that investor, pitching and being able to really read the room, really see how people are reacting to what you're saying in real time and adjusting. And so, you know, how is sort of like transportation going to change in terms of how aviation prices tickets and then also just like the willingness of somebody to get on a plane as we recover from the pandemic?
I think those are great points. I especially love the point about the high performers. Like, why am I paying $5,000 to live in San Francisco in a one-bedroom apartment when I officially now know I can do this job from my living room? Absolutely not. Off to Miami. But yeah, I definitely think we see a lot of that will have. I really do. So as we wrap up here, I just really quickly want to ask if there is anything that you would like to share with our listeners, especially if you could share any virtual events we can take part in, anything that you have coming up, and where can we go to follow you and find out what things you have in the works?
Ross, thank you so much. You know, so people could find me on Twitter, PBNYC26, and same handle on IG. Don't judge me. I'm about to pick up my IG game now that I got some more. You know, I'm home and not with, I'm stuck at home, so I'm gonna pick up my IG game, and obviously on LinkedIn. And then, you know, I think I really don't even want to plug anything that I'm doing. I would more just plug the support that we're providing for students. So if you're a student, if you're listening to this and you're a student and you're thinking about breaking into tech, and for that matter, if you're a new grad, if you're grad class of 2020, and you're like, how do I break into tech? How do I navigate this whole situation, whether you have a job or not, whether you have an internship or not? Check out talentboard.io, check out internhacks.com, hit me up on Twitter. I'll get you connected. The goal here is just keep your eye on the prize. Whatever your situation is right now, make sure that you're still elevating, you're still practicing your craft and putting yourself in position that after this pandemic is over, you are in position to be on the come up. That's the goal. And so that's what I'll plug.
I love that. And I'm just going to throw a plug in here. If you are, I know we have a lot of corporate partners and sponsors and folks that are in university recruitment, the D&I space or talent acquisition who listen. If you are curious on how you can better support your interns, the ones that you are going to be bringing on board virtually, and also potentially in the future, I recommend you all reaching out to Wahab and the URX team. I'm sure there's some synergies or partnerships there that can probably help you navigate these uncharted waters. With that, I'll just say thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Wahab. It's been an honor to have you on the show. I look forward to catching up with you in real life once we get beyond this pandemic.
Thank you, Ross. Thanks for having me. And yes, that's going to be one cool drink whenever we get that opportunity.
Yes, it will.